Welcome everybody to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Episode 53. I am one of your hosts, Nat, and with me as always
is Pat.
And Cat in Hat. With my tiny Batman Arkham Asylum figure.
Tiny Batman.
Nat, Cat, and Pat with a tiny bat.
Tiny bat.
Oh, yeah.
Comics and stuff, huh?
Yeah, I guess.
Been a pretty intense past couple weeks in terms of actual content coming out.
It's been
difficult to stay on top of reading.
I am very far behind my stack, Lord knows.
Yeah, speaking of which, what did you two bring to discuss today? Oh wait, not comics?
I brought comics, okay.
I guess that's true, yeah.
I didn't, and I'm not even going to be sad about
it. What strange device in your hand is that, Kat?
Is that a graphic novel? Because it doesn't look like a graphic novel.
There's a graphic novel without the pictures.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Is it like just word bubbles and thought bubbles, then?
It's just words on a page. I know it's crazy.
But where are the bubbles?
Where's the Witcher? I don't even see him in all these pages.
Yeah.
The gothic dude from South Park.
What's his character design look like?
How do I know if his hair is white naturally or if that's something that, he dyed?
Oh, my God. Can you please go a whole day in the comic book shop just talking to all your customers like that?
I don't think I can because I don't want to offend anybody. Why are you reading Marvel?
Oh my God.
All right, Kat, what are we making fun of but not making fun of right now?
So, I've been reading with the upcoming release of the Witcher series. I decided that I was going to read the actual books. And now, mind you, I have also learned that these books are from Poland. So the guy's, the writer's name, I'm sorry, because I'm about to butcher the hell out of it, because I have never seen letters put together like this. I mean, come on, it's Andrzej Sapkowski, I'm assuming?
That's definitely a V sound. It's got to be Sapkowski.
Polish, so it is what it is. I'm sorry, I destroyed it.
Can I see it real quick? Yeah. Let me try to my hand at that. Andrzej... That might be a silent J too. So
I'm not gonna get done. So I've already been through the first book, which is called Blood of Elves, and my top of the stack right now is Time of Contempt, because in a day I went through about 150 pages of it, and it's an actually very interesting, great series. I enjoy his characters a lot. For a very kind of, you know, back in the times with the castles and the knights, it's a very, and I think this book was written in 1995 too. It's very, present-esque. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting because you watch how the politics play out. You see how, some of the women enchantresses and wizards play, and it's like a normal conversation with women in up high places where it's just extremely catty. And I will say, Yennefer, if they based the series more on the books, I haven't played the games. I was working on that next. I just wanted to read the books first.
Mm.
If they base them off the books, it'll be really interesting. I'm actually extremely curious where they're going with it, because one of the characters, Cersei, she is 13 in this book.
Cersei?
She looks like she's 14 or 15 for the series, so I'm not really sure what they're up to.
They gotta age things up for audiences a little bit. You don't want to do bad things with kids when,
That's true.
Yeah.
Nothing bad has happened per se, entire life story is pretty horrible.
It seems to indicate that there's probably gonna be a lot of violence coming even from her, and that's difficult for audiences
to digest. I don't know if it's violence coming towards her, it'll probably be violence around her.
Interesting.
Would be my guess.
How many books are in the series, by the way?
I think there's five. There's two.
Five?
I think there's seven, but there's two in the front that are short stories, and I don't do well with ones that are short stories of stuff, and that's the introduction of The Witcher.
Okay.
For the first two books, and then after that, The Blood of Elves is the start of the story arc for it, and I believe there's five books.
Okay, cool. Not including the short stories.
Yeah, not including the short stories. I just don't do well with them very... I get bored. I'm like, all right, I finished it. Oh, there's another one.
Yep. That's why you usually only get short stories in, like, collections of short stories mm-hmm. that are also the length of a regular book.
Yeah. Yeah, you lose me after a minute.
Yeah.
What you got, Patrick?
Well, I have a similar thing. Mine's an actual graphic novel, but with the words and word bubbles like they should be, Kat, with your weird thing
printed
over there.
Printed on paper.
Yeah.
Strange formatting on that comic.
I don't really like the panel layout. Yeah.
It's like, where are the gutters? I can't figure this out.
On the sides, there is.
I mean, they're not defined enough for me, okay? I like clean spaces between each of the images. Anyway, sorry.
That's true, actually. You've mentioned that a lot in the past, so funny enough.
Right.
Well, this is a book that Nat... He didn't even put into my hands, really. I came into the store on Wednesday to get my comics as I do, and he just kind of pointed over to the wall, and you're like, there's a book over there called Witchy. And I was like, okay. you didn't even say you should buy it.
No, I think I said you should just look through it.
Yeah, I think you just were like, you should look through it or look at it or something like that. And I just flipped through a couple pages and said to myself, God damn it, Nat. I guess I'm dropping an extra... you know, $15 today on this, but this is an incredible, incredible debut book. I think it's going to be a continued series because there's a number one on the side. This is Witchy, once again, Ariel Slamet Reyes. I am not familiar with her work at all. I've never heard her name before. And this is out of Roar Studios, which is
Lionforge.
Oh, Lion Forge. Okay, never mind.
Roar is an imprint within Lion
Forge. Roar. Okay. That makes sense because I've never heard of this before.
Being like being dismantled.
No, Oni.
That's right.
Oni. Yeah.
Lion Forge.
I don't know if you've seen like this at all, Kat, but the art style in this is just fantastic. It's very. It's almost as if a Steven Universe like leaned into its anime.
Yeah.
Like, forebearers.
That's definitely a fair statement.
It's a great, great description.
Yeah, and not to mention that, but it does take a lot of cues from, like, anime tropes and, like, styles. Like, there's a lot of blank space, cinematic...
I don't even want to admit how many times I've sniffed a book, and this just, like, called me out in graphic novel.
Yeah. Yeah, It's very interesting. You know, there's like one of the first scenes that she's running out of the house with the piece of toast in her mouth, you know, like classic anime first episode kind of thing. And not to spoil too much, because both of y'all should read this.
Yeah, I really want to
know. Yeah. In a world with magic and witches, if you couldn't guess by the title, the power of a witch is determined by the length of your hair. So you can just look around and see who's more powerful. But in the very first few pages, her dad gets burned at the stake for having too long of hair, because then at a certain point you're considered a threat to the state. And so, and the main character has extremely long hair, but she wears it, like she charms it to make it look shorter to go around. Like... the world. Yeah, it's...
I, like, hit a point where hair is too long, so...
Yeah, and then this, you know, and they, like,
Rapunzeling
all...
everywhere.
Yeah, like, all of her, like the, her, like, the other students at her school, they all make fun of her for having such short hair and stuff, and, like, yeah.
I've been working on my magic, as most
people. You're getting more powerful,
I'm becoming
man.
More powerful.
Yeah, and I think here it's, like, an ambient thing, like... It doesn't grow normally. Like, it's directly related to your powers.
So, like, as you get stronger, it just grows.
Yeah, if I'm getting something. Because there's something that happens to her hair specifically in this book. Once again, no spoilers. But that affects her magic.
Interesting.
Yep. Cool. Fun stuff.
Very cool. That's
interesting high fantasy world, too. That's I haven't really seen anything that like it. I mean, there's magic and stuff, but... Yeah, interesting, cool stuff. I'm so excited for the next issue after this, or the next book, I guess.
Yeah, future comics right there.
Yeah, yay!
Something you can throw in your backpack and it's a full story, but there's more coming, right?
Quite literally, I just had this sitting in my backpack, and yep, and I've been trying to force it into everybody's hands. So, what about you now? What would you read?
I know you just fell off your bike, but you should
read
this.
Yeah. A That's awesome. Well, I'm the lame one. I just have a comic. I mean, like, come on.
Sorry to ruin your day.
I've talked about this ad nauseum, and I will continue to do so even until after the final issue has released. Silver Surfer Black by Donnie Cates and Trad Moore with colors by Dave Stewart. You should be reading this. This is the best book Marvel's putting out.
You should definitely at least buy the trade for it. It's a really good story.
No. Come to Griffin. I will fucking hunt down the different printings of issues 1, 2, and 3 and get you caught up to this thing, because it is lovely, cosmic, existential goodness that only Donnie Cates can write, and I've never had seen an instance where an artist is so married to the words and, like, it's all coming together the way that Trad Moore's psychedelic trip fest of Silver Surfer.
Don't worry, there's not shrooms in the pages. You are seeing
that. Yeah, you are seeing all of these things happening. Somebody drew this, and I don't know how they came up with it.
That'd be funny if it's not actually that crazy. It's just that Donnie Cates is there with, like, an acid dropper, just, like, dropping it on each printing of the comic, because it comes out, so you just pick it up, and you're like,
well, it's like, it's not until, like, page 4, so you actually have to read the book before you really start to feel the effect.
Yeah, it starts to kick in. Yeah. It takes a minute to kick in.
It's like, somebody just handling the book's not going to get that. It's like, you have to actually start reading it, and then it's like,
it's on page 4, and you touch
it. And it's just, like, on the bottom right corner, like, right when you would start flipping the page. You show it to other people on the videos, and they're like, it's not that crazy looking.
Yeah, you, like, open it up to other people, and it's just, like, gray. Right? Like, straight lines. And, like,
it's like stick figures of Silver Surfer in the board.
Like, just, like, super shittily drawn stuff. Something, like, that I would draw.
It's actually Tom King doing the artwork on this, because I love Tom King's writing, but Tom King is a shitty artist, and he said it himself, and he'll really, like, sort of screw up people's sightings, and he'll draw, like, Batman, and it's like a stick figure wearing a Batman hat. It's amazing. It's
pretty
good.
See, now I want a Tom King comic book just for that.
That is awesome. I wish
I would pay $5 for that. I would do it.
I wish he had done that for me when I got my Mr. Miracle signed.
I'm actually kind of surprised he didn't. He does it a lot to his Batman work, though.
Maybe it's because I got his Mr. Miracle and not his Batman then.
Great.
So,
That's pretty awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
So,
getting out of that, I don't know about you, but I didn't really see much interesting news.
Part 3.
Breaking news, actually, that happened about an hour ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. What? So, I'm going to go ahead and just read a top line. This is from Newsarama. Frank Miller will return to his Dark Knight Returns continuity for The Golden Child, a 48-page one-shot. Written by Miller, with art by Raphael Grandpa and colors by Jordi Belair. It's going to be a Black Label title scheduled for December 11th. It's set 3 years after The Dark Knight III, The Master Race, and it focuses on Jonathan Kent, the son of Superman and Wonder Woman in this alternate continuity. The lead character appears to be Carrie Kelly, who is now Batwoman, and she has been the one who's been Gotham City's protector.
What?
Yes, but Miller describes...
God damn it, now I have more stuff to read.
Yeah, so, okay. He describes Jonathan Kent as he's really sort of developed as a little floating Buddha. Someone who, when he wasn't even a toddler yet, was speaking in full sentences and had an understanding of events that surpassed anybody else. He's the most magical member of the family.
Well, he's half God. Well, wait.
But so is Lara. So,
well, no, how is
he's not half god, he's quarter god then, right? Because Diana's a god, half Diana's god. Half god, so
oh, yeah, you're right. He's half Amazonian, or he's a quarter Amazonian, a quarter god, and then half Kryptonian.
Yes,
yes, exactly.
We just mapped here, there you go.
We did.
Yep.
And he's being, you know,
take that genetics,
helped along by his older sister, who also shares those genetics. So, yeah, this seems awesome. Raphael Grandpa was actually where I figured out that this was happening. I was just checking my Instagram, and sure enough, he has the cover art right there on his Instagram page. I am a huge fan of both Frank Miller and Raphael Grandpa. He has a great black and white story in Batman Black and White Volume 3, I believe. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That's some cool breaking stuff, and the fact that it's not, like, something in mid-2020, you know, it's actually coming out this year.
It's also a one-shot, too, so I'm really interested to see how that plays out.
That's great. They did a one-shot for Dark Knight Returns not too long ago, probably within the last 3 years, right before Master Race,
where it was telling the story of Jason Todd dying, like the final piece to the story, and it was Frank Miller and John Romita Jr. again. So
I really should, and now I have to read all these. So that's,
I own most of this stuff.
I will buy The Dark Knight Returns, borrow Strikes Back, and then I'll buy...
Strikes Again,
and then I'll buy Master X.
Woof, Strikes Again, man.
The Empire of Batman Strikes Back.
Yeah. The Empire of Batman. The Empire of Lex Luthor, Kryptonian wannabe Strikes Back. I don't know. Strikes Again is a rough read. But I'm excited about this. Like I said, I'm a really big fan of the creative team in general. On this,
I mean, I've gone through Frank Miller when he did Batman and Robin. That one.
Well, All-Star Batman and Robin is a glorious mess of a masterpiece.
It's a beautiful, beautiful book. Thank you, Jim Lee.
Yeah.
Frank Miller.
It's a beautiful train wreck, I think. It's an interesting thing.
Can't look away.
it comes from where these stories are being told. He describes in that article that. You know, he started with Dark Knight Returns as being an exploration of what happens to superheroes when they get old. And this is now that generation that has formed from those all older heroes. Like, what comes next for the people whose heroes were beaten and broken down, and now they have taken the mantle of protector.
So. Interesting. Yeah, that should be... I'm excited for sure.
I still hate the idea of Wonder Woman and Superman being together, but I do like the storytelling outcomes.
Never will.
Yeah, they definitely not for each other.
No.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense for her.
Yeah. Oh man.
It's fine. No, it's fine. Wonder Woman. Andy's only screaming at the other end of this now. It's fine.
Is she a big Wonder Woman Superman?
I like the idea of
shipper.
I like the Wonder Woman Kate Kane ship better.
That is literally our entire wedding is based on Superman and Wonder Woman and the New 52 run where they're together.
After reading what G. Willow Wilson is doing with Steve Trevor and Wonder Woman, though, like, she is the man in the relationship.
Yep.
And he is a stay-at-home. He has his job, but he's little more than a stay-at-home husband. And Superman could not do that.
Nope, that is my life, my ideal. My wife is my Wonder Woman. And definitely Steve Trevor.
To be Steve Trevor?
Yeah. That's my...
We can get in this argument and this debate, but we don't want to, so we'll just keep on moving.
Yeah.
So something else that, like, I ran into, I don't know if you guys have come across this, but Rob Liefeld and Sean Murphy had a little bit of a Twitter fight over some comments Rob Liefeld made about DC not having interesting stories since the 1980s.
Eat my ass!
Yeah. Sean Murphy, who also, you know, works at DC doing Curse of the White Knight. And
all right, you know what? No. We're going to drop this on the floor right now because...
Wait, sorry, who said that again? Sean Murphy said that?
No. Rob Liefeld said that about DC. And I'm paraphrasing, so forgive me. I don't have the Twitter, the tweets in front of me, but I was reading them back and forth, and it was like... Yeah, it got interesting.
Says the people who literally are releasing a thing called Contagion.
Yeah, months after.
What's Deceased doing?
I mean, say what you will. I just think it's really stupid for creators to not want to promote the business, just in general.
What does Rob Liefeld do?
He's the creator of Deadpool.
Okay.
Yeah, and Cable. And Cable's my favorite X-Man, so like... I'm not saying anything negative about Rob Liefeld in terms of what he brought creatively to comics, but come on, man! Like these beefs, we don't need them. We need people reading comics and reading all comics so that we can get more comics. So
it's just unnecessary to say stuff like that, especially like coming from one creator to another. Like, yeah.
Well, he wasn't targeting Sean Murphy specifically, but Sean Murphy was the first person to react and be like, "Yo, have you read my stuff?" And Rob Liefeld actually took a picture of Curse of the White Knight number one off of his table, so he was reading that. Ooh. So it was kind of like, okay.
Yeah, I guess not like targeting specific people because he's just fucking calling out a whole publisher, like, which is comprised of a bunch of different creators who are all very talented.
Not
otherwise,
to be
they
that
wouldn't
person,
be there.
But I am like considering dropping the majority of my Marvel titles. So.
I started comics as a Marvel fan, and I was looking at my stack for the past 2 weeks, and I only have two Marvel titles in there.
I think there's and this is a broader discussion, but like the embarrassment of riches is taking almost too far in Marvel, and they start to overutilize a particular story or a particular character, and like there's almost too much content. And what you're seeing in the industry right now is that people can only spend X dollars a month. So rather than like continuing to read titles, they're going to drop stuff in one place and start picking up things to fill that spot, not actually grow and add more things. So it could be punishing to the industry to keep increasing the number of specific titles and having an oversaturation of specific characters. Well, but it's a different conversation.
I mean, the hard part that I have with Marvel a lot of the times is, like, War of the Realms, that was such a disappointment for me, because when I was reading it, the realization that this is spread out between, oh my, I don't even know how many comics, because things were happening in other comics, then I'd come back and I'm like, I have no idea what's happening.
See, that's interesting, because I'm reading Absolute Carnage, and I don't think you need to read any of the tie-ins to make the story work.
No, so. and it's probably writer-based, but at the same time, they've done that with multiple things. Yeah. So I think
the Squirrel-Girl tie-in was pretty standalone to that, even though it was also epic. And
I will say I read the Absolute Carnage Spirits of Vengeance, but I am a sucker for Danny Ketch Ghost Rider, so that's one of the titles I'll be picking up later this year as well. Yeah. So
that's kind of the hard part that I'm having right now, is it. Everything for right now for DC seems relatively self-contained.
Yeah.
And
I think that's a big thing, too. Like, I haven't been reading, like, I don't read, like, Batman or Action Comics or Superman.
Right.
Or, like, mostly because there's just so much of it, and it's just so, and it's going on so much. I mean, that's why I dropped both Miles Morales, Spider-Man, and Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. I still love them as characters and love that stuff, but, like, 50 issues of that, like.
Yeah. There comes to a point where, like, the number starts to be a, It's a deterrent. It starts to weigh on the reader, that they're looking at the number and seeing how many issues that the story contains. And it really doesn't. It's just that there is this perception that all of it is part of the same story. And, you know, little broken story arcs and 5-issue minis are much more easily digestible and much easier to understand. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And I feel like, yeah, and that's one of the reasons, especially why I'll read Squirrel Girl to the bitter end, is because it's very, like, there's 4 issues, then there's a 4-issue arc, then a single standalone issue, then another 4-issue arc, and none of them really relate to each other. And it's just very digestible, because, you know, each trade you get is going to be 1 arc and one standalone.
And then I read Justice League, and I'm like, this is beautiful.
Yeah, and that's, like, very, like, continuity-driven. But, itself, like, I think, Justice League is smart in the sense that it doesn't let itself be weighed down by what else is happening in the DCU. It's just kind of telling its story.
But that's the thing, is, like, for Justice League, that makes sense because it's all of them.
Right.
So, it makes sense to me on that realm. So it.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that continuing stories are bad.
I'm not either. It's general, just, like, obviously DC, me and Nat are obviously extremely DC heavy when it comes to, you know, comic pulls, but when I read Marvel stuff, I don't feel like it's very self-contained. It's like,
that's why I've, like, been loving Silver Surfer Black.
It's completely and utterly self-contained to Silver Surfer Black.
It's important to Silver Surfer's overall continuity. Mm-hmm. Like, they're hitting elements of his story that is important, but
I completely agree with you, and I think that's probably why I'm fading out more too, and that's probably why my interest in Ghost Spider has dropped a little bit, because now I'm dealing with Peter Parker, I'm dealing with Miles Morales, I'm dealing with all the 616.
By putting her in the 616, all of a sudden it's not her story anymore.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's the common thing I hear from y'all, is just burnout. But anyway, we're contributing to the feud right now.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's good stuff on, I don't think a publisher, like, of the, I'm thinking Boom, Image, Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, IDW, I know I'm missing others. I'm apologizing.
There's so many,
but, like, I can think of at least for a second that there's at least something that's worth reading for everybody. You know, there's so much out there right now. We got way off the rails on that one. Well, that's kind of interesting. Seriously. You had some Hawkeye TV news that you had come across.
Yeah, I just saw that. Right before we started recording, it was. Yes, Jonathan Eagla, one of the main writers for Mad Men. I can't remember if he was the head writer or like a co-writer or something, but he will be the showrunner for Hawkeye, which is a very interesting choice, I guess.
Yeah.
Mad Men is a very, like, you know, specific, it's a very specific genre too. Yeah. That sort of.
All I ever think about with Hawkeye anymore is West Coast Avengers, so it's just a giant joke to me. That's
all you need to know. But yeah. I've been excited for the show. I really like Kate Bishop as a character and her relationship with like Clint Barton, mm-hmm. kind of like.
And she is supposed to be the lead. It's supposed to be Kate Bishop's show.
Yeah, and that's usually when, like, the two Hawkeyes get together. It's usually very much a old guard, new guard mm-hmm. sort of thing that's happening. So I imagine him being present every now and then, especially in the first few episodes, getting her trained up, maybe, but then not so much. Because Jeremy Renner, like, he has other stuff to be doing as well.
And he's so great in the role. Like, he's what makes Hawkeye interesting. I'm not interested in that character, Clint, at all, but he's great. But, in the same vein, apparently Disney and Marvel are courting Hailee Steinfeld for the role of Kate Bishop in this series. Yeah, I'm like, that's funny. Steinfeld, Hailee Steinfeld.
Oh, Steinfeld. Yes. I actually really thought you said Steinfeld.
That's funny. I thought you were talking about the music of being awesome, because this is great casting. Hailee, for those who are unfamiliar, she's in Edge of 17. She was the lead. Well, she was Gwen Stacy in Into the Spider-Verse, and she was the lead in Bumblebee.
Oh yeah, I never saw that.
Bumblebee's incredible.
Is it good?
Bumblebee is like one of the best Spielberg movies that Spielberg never made. Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. It's very like E.T. It's a girl and her dog, but the dog is a robot. Yeah, I'm really hoping she says yes to this and that maybe she gets a song on the soundtrack too, because her song from Bumblebee is awesome as well.
Oh, she sings.
Yeah, she's
a
talented singer.
So. Nice. I guess that makes sense, and she's a voice actress as well.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She is definitely one of those up and coming talents, and she's got enough snark to really make this work. And that's also big star power to put behind, you know, the Disney Plus series.
Yeah.
Which they are, I mean, they're doing. They're going after the people that fit right for the role. So mm-hmm. bring up the dump truck full of money and lay it at her feet, because this would be a cool opportunity. Also, she would probably refill the role of Hawkeye in whatever Avengers movie comes next.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see if there's any bleed through from the shows into the movies.
Well, they bleed through from the movies into the shows.
Well, I know they're all directly related to it, but that would be interesting if, like, if in one of the movies, then Hawkeye, you know.
Yeah.
Or maybe he retires at one point. Like, in the comics, he's retired.
Well, maybe he, like, gives her his bow and was, like, straight up, was like, this is you now. This is your.
I think he does that in the comics, actually.
Okay, cool.
No. She has her own bow. Because it's also one of those things, like, her parents are filthy rich.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So maybe he gets hired as a, like, an archery coach, and this goes down the rabbit hole.
I think that's exactly what it might be.
That's cool.
Yeah, so, but then her parents turn out to be, like, the bad rich people or whatever. So there's a whole cool thing. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, I'm really excited for all these Disney Plus shows.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, on the other side of things, maybe falling into DC. Did y'all see that Harley Quinn teaser?
The movie teaser for
the Birds of Harley Quinn.
Oh yeah, excuse me. The Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, my biggest complaint about this was it's too fast. Like, I don't know what I'm seeing, and I need a little bit more time with it.
Well, that's why it's a teaser.
I guess it's a true teaser. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. It really teased you. It was over there like, nah. Yeah. You can't catch me.
I almost missed it before it, because, like, people were kind of murmuring right before the movie began. I was like, oh, we didn't get the Harley trailer, because I was supposed to be tied to it. But it's, like, almost after the trailers that they do it, so.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Did you see it?
Yeah, I did see it. I had to watch the one that came out in Spanish, though.
Oh, well, that's right, because WB wasn't releasing it until after the movie was released, so it didn't get released until earlier this week.
So. Yeah, I had to watch the Spanish one, but, I mean, just give me a goddamn trailer. Just give me the one, and we'll be fine.
Yeah. I still don't love the look of Harley. I'm much more of a classic Harley fan in the Jester outfit, so we'll see.
I'm curious to see where that goes. We'll see.
Yeah.
I love Ewan McGregor, so him playing Black Mask, just I'm in for this movie.
Yeah. Oh, is that who Black mm-hmm. Mask is? Nice.
Excellent.
Do you remember who all the other Birds of Prey are?
Actress-wise? It's Mew. Mew is playing Huntress. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, for all of you.
Okay.
Mew. Julie Smollett Bell is playing Black Canary.
Okay.
I don't know the actress playing Cassie Kane, Orphan.
Okay.
And then Rosie Perez is playing...
Orphan's going to be in it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I don't know what they'll call her in the story, but that's for easiest argument to call her as Orphan rather than...
Yeah.
And then Rosie Perez is playing Renee Montoya, nice. Who could be playing The Question. We don't know that, but...
Nice. That'd be awesome. It's really cool. I've been down for this.
One of those ones that I know he exists. It's just a...
He or she, depending on which... That's the thing, is Renee Montoya was questioned for a long time in the comics. So.
Yeah. I wonder if I still wonder if Jared Leto is going to make an appearance in this.
I hope not. I hope his time as the Joker is over and then we'll figure something out. Actually, it would be nice if they just left the Joker out of the next phase of DC. Do the Joker movie, let it stand on its own, and then move.
I kind of agree with her that I'm sick of clowns.
Yeah, right? Seriously.
Yeah, but although I actually do love the Joker, so I shouldn't say that.
Yeah. I also loved It, Chapter 2. So.
I haven't seen any of the It's ever.
I'm in the super minority on the second one, so.
What, that you liked it?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So
Andy didn't hate it, she just wasn't amazed by it either.
I think the expectations of what people wanted was different, but that's a different podcast.
Well, maybe staying in a similar thing, with Margot Robbie, I just saw that she's trying to produce a Tank Girl movie.
Yeah, and with the potential option of her starring if the script is right.
Yeah.
So
she's not necessarily attached as Tank Girl, but she would be perfect.
She would be perfect.
She wouldn't even have to put on makeup or anything.
No, just a helmet.
Just a helmet, yeah. Like the Band-Aid.
Yeah, the Band-Aid, whatever. And then a cigarette in the mouth. You know, like
yeah, exactly. Just dress her up in the costume. No extra bells needed.
Yeah.
Oh man, that would be a great movie.
I would enjoy that. I mean, at the Tank Girl movie with I can't remember the actress's name, and I apologize. But from like the early 90s was pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. I always forget that they tried to, or that they made one. Yeah. It just didn't really catch on.
No, it didn't. With the comic culture, or the mainstream geek culture hadn't been a thing yet. So an obscure book like that was a cool movie that was way ahead of its time.
Isn't that always sad when you're like, if you had come out like 5 years later or 10 years later, yeah. Like this would be a number one box office. Like it would be a weekend box office.
Yeah. You hope that stuff catches on Blu-ray now, like that people will go back to it and revisit that.
Actually, Warner Brothers seems to be doing a lot of advertising that they're releasing a lot of shit from their vault too, so it sounds like that's
cool.
Happening.
I saw that the 90s Punisher was trending on Netflix.
Really?
When they got it. Yeah.
You know what? There was speaking of announcement in this vein, the announcement was made on Disney Plus that they're gonna have the 90s Marvel cartoons, so like 90s X-Men. Yeah, exactly. The 90s X-Men
first
show
thing out of my mouth. That's when I figured out my favorite character was Rogue, was that series.
Man, that series, Bishop. So give me all the time travel.
Never saw it.
Well, you get an opportunity to just know that it's very old looking.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I love
animation.
See,
you say
that,
but I won't even. I love that animation so much. I really do. I can't even lie. I love it.
I like
the character designs a lot too.
See, I tout Bruce Timm for understanding that. In order to get the animation fluid, you had to simplify the designs, and that's why the Batman the Animated Series universe worked and lasted for so long, was because there was a very universal design to it, whereas, to give them credit, the X-Men show tried to do comic book style art. It doesn't animate well.
I will say, if they put the old Spider-Man one on there, they have me.
Oh, it's already there. That was really the announcement. They announced Iron Man, Fantastic Four...
Fantastic Four is old.
No, it was the same time. It was a fantastic, and that's the same theme song I sing all of the time. It's ridiculous, but anyway, X-Men and Spider-Man. What I don't know is whether or not the Silver Surfer cartoon is going to be on there, because I would be all over that shit. That cartoon was crazy. Mm-hmm. It should be, now that they own Fox. I mean, I don't know why it wouldn't.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I always forget that they own Fox. Oh, that's right. I did find that out, that Spider-Man cartoon is somehow owned by Fox. I don't know how they got it.
I think it was a Fox Kids show.
I think so. I think you're right.
So, which is interesting that Warner Brothers was smart enough to snag Batman back, because Batman was originally a Fox Kids production.
Because they're not stupid. Yeah. They're like, this is successful. Grab it.
Yeah.
Yep. That's crazy.
Yeah. There's another, like, we're in the same milieu. The Joker, Joker, not the, just Joker, has won the Golden Barrel Award, which is the top prize at the Venice Film Festival.
That's crazy to me that it won at a film, European film festival.
8 minutes standing ovation after the movie ended.
I actually do remember seeing that. You know when Cannes is?
I don't know when Cannes is.
Yeah.
I know TIFF is happening right now, and there was a TIFF showing for it as well.
Okay, interesting. So. Yeah, that would be interesting to see how it is. Man, I am so excited for this. Although, I was reading some stuff about, I don't know if you guys saw this, but with Joaquin Phoenix on set.
Mm-mm.
I guess he just had a garbage time playing the role.
Really?
Like, it's not like he was sad or depressed, him and the director just, like, constantly butted heads about, like, the direction to take the character.
Really?
And, like how to do it, like...
They are presenting themselves as being buddy-buddy, and, like, they were there together during the standing ovation and everything.
See, now I want to know.
And Joaquin Phoenix is extremely professional and a great actor, so, like, at the end of the day, he's going to do what he needs to do, but, like, also, apparently, he would just be done sometimes and just get up and walk off set. Like, right in the middle of shooting, he'd just be like, I'm done for the day.
I'm also hearing he's in every scene. So there isn't, like, a scene where that goes off to somebody else's perspective of what's happening. Like, he's in every scene of the movie. So the work week for him has to have been pretty brutal. Like,
yeah, it's, like, just him. Because, like, if he is in every scene, then that means he wouldn't get a break at all during the shooting.
Yeah, he'd be on every call sheet.
Every single. Yeah, and so, like, that would explain why at certain points, because it was, like, I saw all these things, like, Joaquin Phoenix would throw tantrums and walk off the set, but, like, in the actual interview, like, with, I forget who it was one of the crew members,
mm-hmm.
they were talking about, like, no, he would just, like, just without saying anything, just get up and walk off and be like, I'm done for now, we'll see you tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, yeah, but... They finished it.
Yeah, they managed to make something that people are saying is pretty good.
Well, the thing that I'm curious about now is who won the argument between him and the director of which way to go with the character.
The editor won.
Huh?
The editor.
Yeah.
The editor is who makes the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whoever was in that editing room was the one who won the argument.
Yep.
Because even if they did multiple takes, a take that was more akin to Joaquin Phoenix's or... a take that was more akin to Todd Phillips. It's whatever the editor feels is the right take in the editing room is what's going to make it into the movie.
Yeah, from what I saw, and I might be getting this confused, but the main difference was, like, whether or not to be a like a true character study or to be a psych study, if that makes sense. Like, to specifically be about Arthur Fleck or to be about the ailment that is Joker, essentially, I guess, if that makes sense.
I'm sure it'll make sense in the context of the movie.
Yeah, but I have no idea. So that was sad that, because, like, yeah, you usually see all these things, like, you know, like, great time on set, all the directors and actors, you know, they have to, like, stop laughing and patting each other on the back to start filming. And
yeah. And this is a different kind of movie, though, you know.
Yeah, like, apparently. So from what it sounds like, the actual filming of the movie is essentially the movie, too. Like, just solemn depression and, like, sadness.
Yeah, I can't wait to see this movie. I'm so glad I compromised and I'm going to go see it. Yeah.
I am really excited.
I'm excited to see Joaquin's performance because they're like, people are claiming Oscar already. Like,
I keep saying after watching The Master, he's born for this. And apparently too, another one of the things that he really didn't want to do, but Todd Phillips was adamant about, was doing the emaciated look again. And so apparently he lost 52 pounds.
That's absurd.
To play this role. And he, like, the whole time he was like, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this. He did it anyway because, like, at the end of the day, like I said, he's an actor first and, like, a human being second.
That's wild.
Yeah, and so, yep.
Wow. I don't know how this has not come up at all, but Patty Jenkins signed an exclusive TV deal with Netflix.
Oh, I did see that.
just TV, right?
She did TV for years, apparently, which I didn't know. But,
like, she's not contractually, like, she can still make films.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. She's doing exclusive stuff for them, is my understanding. So she can still do films, because if I don't get a Wonder Woman 3...
What? Didn't Benioff and Weiss, too, just sign an exclusive deal with Netflix as well? The co-creators of the Game of Thrones TV show.
I think I remember saying
that. I thought they were doing something else as well, though.
They're doing Star Wars. But once again, if there's a film versus episodic... we can't call it TV anymore. Like, they're episodic storytelling.
Yeah.
Episodic film.
The thing is, this little thing that surprised me is I didn't realize this, but I didn't realize she worked in TV for a decade.
Yeah.
So she's directed episodes of Arrested Development, The Killing, Entourage, what? And Betrayal. Yep.
Dude, Arrested Development is nuts because it's God, who's the other main director of it? It's one of the big superhero directors now. God damn.
Oh, it's the Russo brothers, right?
No, Russo. Is it the Russo brothers?
I think they did Arrested Development and Community.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is funny, because both comedies to move on to, like, the most serious films in the
MCU. The most serious films? Come on, they're Marvel films.
Well, in the MCU, like...
Oh, yeah.
Especially Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah, no, true. Fair enough. So.
And I'm also you're just going to drop this here. Borderlands 3 is out, and you should play it if you like it.
That's true. Just last night, like I was telling you before I came here, when I was leaving my house this morning at about 6:30 to come here, my roommate was still up playing it, because he's a huge gamer, and he got it.
I was told to go to bed like a child.
That's awesome.
You need to go to bed. You've been up since 4 o'clock this morning. It is now midnight.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Cool. Well,
yeah. I think the last sort of interesting thing I saw this week was the new additions to the cast of Suicide Squad, which is already a nuts cast, but on top of that, Peter Capaldi, a.k.a., what is it, the 12th Doctor?
Yes.
He is going to be in it.
Yep.
For
what we can tell.
It's like a 95% at this point. And then also announced at the same time as Pete Davidson as a maybe/probably.
I feel like James Gunn is just, like, going through his Rolodex of, like, people he wants to work with for a single day of shooting. And he's just going to kill a bunch of people in this movie.
That would be awesome.
I'm thinking about right now is just the fact that Dave Bautista has been running around saying he wants to do a Gears movie, and then they put him in the new Gears game.
Yeah. freaking Marcus Fenix looks exactly like him.
Totally. I'll totally give you that one. I'm just laughing because they're like, all right, we hear you. We'll put you in the game for right now. We'll work on some stuff. That's just weird things that keep happening.
Super meta.
That's all I can think about lately is Dave Bautista's commercial, when he's, like, in the armor and everything. So you mentioned James Gunn. First thing I thought of was Dave Bautista.
He should be in Suicide Squad. I think that's, like, unconfirmed whether or not he's there, but I'm sure he will.
What?
Who James Gunn?
No, Bautista.
Oh, Bautista. I was like is he gonna
Gunn's
play?
The director.
He might just be, like, one of the random characters that gets killed. That would be so...
You know his brother's definitely going to die in the movie.
That would be so funny if, like, for 5 seconds he came in the film and was like, hey, I'm Slipknot, and then dies right
there. That would be hilarious.
Hey, guys, remember me? I've been around this whole time. It's Slipknot, your best... That would be... Oh, my God. Sorry, not to be a prescriptive writer, James Gunn, because Lord knows you don't need it, but...
Yeah.
Please, for me! cool, yeah. And then... I so hope that just everybody die, like half the things die.
Yeah, I hope they have kind of an exorbitantly large number of supervillains that fail in the Suicide Squad missions.
They just have, like, a freaking montage.
Yeah, it was exactly a montage.
That's what I was expecting from the first one.
After an 80s montage.
In the beginning of Act 2, we just get a montage of missions with hopefully, like, some, like, upbeat synth music.
Every five seconds, cuts back to Amanda Waller just hitting the button.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
Hitting the button.
You know what we're forgetting, about, too? Harley Quinn comes out soon.
Okay.
Oh, the show?
The cartoon, yes.
Yeah, the cartoon comes out.
You know
what?
We were talking about this earlier, not to completely derail that, but, like, did we ever talk about the full trailer for the Harley Quinn show?
I don't think we ever did.
I don't think we did either.
I think we all kind of looked at each other and were like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see the one where they did the trailer with the cast, the behind the scenes? It was on DC Universe. It's freaking great. You should watch it.
I'm excited about this show. Like, DC Universe is really leaning into its adult content. So the idea of, like, Harley knocking people's heads off with the mallet is, like, insane.
Dude, it's really weird hearing Hayley Kukuo, like, swear. It's really weird to hear it because I'm like, you're on Big Bang Theory. This is like FCC stuff, man. Like, you can't swear. The hell are you doing? Stop
it. I want to hear Batman swear in this because it's Diedrich Bader as Batman again.
And that's the thing is I never realized who that is until I saw that behind the scenes thing.
Oh, really?
And stuff. And then he was, I was like, how do I not know? I've seen this guy.
And
so
this
many
is the
times.
Second time he's played Batman.
I know. I love it.
So that's what's going to be really funny is if, like, they get him to be ultra violent and dark is, this is the Brave and the Bold Batman voice actor who was like superhero, the fists of justice, you know.
I love Brave and the Bold so much. You should, so great. Patrick, if you haven't watched it, you should watch it. My favorite one is still the Superman one. Earthquake!
It's a really
Superman
great show.
That you have red kryptonite and he has the bottle of Kandor, which is the shrunken city of Krypton, and he walks up to it and it's earthquake and you hear screaming and there's an explosion.
Yeah. He's shaking the bottle.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's dark. It's dark in a comedy
though. Yeah. Yay, dark comedy.
But DC's
making hard moves in the film side. I think that
I'm a film side and honestly like episodic side. Yeah. They're going
well,
into
I'm in film,
more hard
I'm in film in general.
Yeah.
You know.
Episodic film,
exactly. And I think they might have taken a mark from their failed attempt at the DC universe. And
why don't we go there since we've only got a couple minutes left. We all watched Titans episode one, right?
Yes.
Season two, episode one.
Yeah.
What were your initial thoughts just on that?
This should have been the previous season.
Kat's pointing with fervor, and her arms are gonna fall out of her sockets.
Because I was honestly like, why wasn't this the season finale? Logistically, we made some mistakes here because I'm like for me as an opening, garbage, horrible. I'm like, this is literally just ending. This is all an ending. As an episode, it was good. As an opening, awful.
Because it's a fucking course correction for the show. I mean, it's fairly obvious that, one, they hadn't cast Bruce by the end of this first season.
No.
They hadn't cast Deathstroke by the end of the first season. So they completely, they dropped the last episode of season one because they needed to add all of the elements to pull them towards the story that they're doing now.
And they could have, they could have just done the end of the Trigon thing, and then you could have done, like, you didn't even have to have the actor to give that Deathstroke teaser.
Because
the way they shot it initially, like, just that first shot where he's in the cabin, he has the long hair, back to us with the gun, like, mid-screen.
I'm pretty sure you saw the strap on the back of his head.
Yeah, he has the strap for the eye patch. For a comic books fan, as in everybody who's watching this show, immediately you know that's Deathstroke.
Well, they may not have even known what the next villain was going to be, where they were going to go with that.
Well, even though they could have cut out that entire portion and not had any of that in there, or him talk to Bruce Wayne, they could have just gone to the... I mean, I guess he did need to talk to Bruce because they went to the tower.
Well, there wouldn't have been specific closure on the season. And that's... The thing was, they already had an open-ended ending with what they did at the end of episode 11, I think, right?
Yes.
Was, Mm-hmm. So if they would have had a 12th episode, which was the first one, it would have been an open-ended ending with the people separating from each other.
See, and I would have been fine with that.
But they did an open-ended ending anyway. I don't think it was a good first episode. Yeah. I think it was a good episode.
Yes, and that's it's how just, I feel about it.
I really feel like they had written themselves into a corner tonally. Like, they weren't sure what the next tone was going to be. And once they realized the direction they wanted to go, it was better to just end it where it was. Give everybody, this is Titans going forward. This is our fresh start.
And I feel like they, with the success of Doom Patrol after mm-hmm. it, they realized they could and should lean into the comic book
yes.
nature of it. They can still keep it dark and gritty like they have, but like, why not also give them their ridiculous costumes? Yes.
And maybe the episode was finished and Trigon didn't work. Because that's another thing, like the CG could have just not worked. And they were like, we can't release this now. We have to wait and get this working properly. From, like, because to me, there was a lot of, I saw the seams when I watched this episode, that I could see that there was stuff behind the scenes where they're like, we need to course correct. Maybe the CG is not finished. We don't necessarily have actors in place for these other roles that are going to be important going forward. So we need to sign these people onto this. Maybe they didn't even have some of the leads signed for a second season. So getting all of the stuff in line to make sure that the season was going to happen, so they hold off on releasing that episode.
Well, like I said, I think some logistical mistakes were made with that. And I mean, like I said, it wasn't a bad episode. I just hated it for an opening.
Yeah.
So like today's episode that they released, I'll probably be like, this is what should have been the opening.
Oh shit, it's Friday.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But yeah, tinfoil hat moment. I think that they're going to use Jason Todd for the Robin and Slade relationship.
Nice. No, what I think they're going to do is I think Jason Todd is going to die.
See, and that was kind of what I was thinking, too, is they're going to shoot him.
Because there's definitely leaning on that this is Deathstroke's return, mm-hmm. not that Deathstroke is appearing for the first time. Like, yeah. This is definitely the Titans in the past dealt with and got fucked up by Deathstroke.
Mm-hmm.
And this then. Is the swan song of him coming back.
See, and then that's the other part of it. I'm like, so are we going to get some Red Hood action?
So,
God, I hope not. Kill just Jason Todd and let him die.
Red Hood.
If there's anything like season one, then every episode from here on out will be what it should be. Because that's the same thing I feel like our criticisms with the first season was, is like, what the fuck was the first episode? Like,
yeah.
it did, and we're all like, okay, it's necessary, we know why they did these things.
Yeah.
But,
The first episode of the season felt like they were two episodes they fused together. The first episode of season two was
right.
an episode and a half fused together, so.
Yeah.
And it worked for me as an episode. It just did not work as in episode one.
I think taking this out of the seasonal context, if you're just watching this, like
yeah.
binging it all back to back, which now you can.
Right.
Then you're not fine. Going to
well,
notice.
Did anybody look at, they did the director's stuff.
Oh, I didn't see that.
They have a director's cut of the first season where they have a bunch of stuff. They're like, oh, binge it. And I was like, there's like 30 some odd episode things in there now. And I'm like, no.
Oh, really? Interesting.
It looks interesting. I'm curious to see, and I like kind of want to go through and watch each one of those pieces and see. I want an explanation from the actors of what they're up to, the explanation from the crew and all that stuff.
Before we run out of time, the accent that they chose to use for Bruce as a high society New Yorker, fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Because you didn't lose Ian Glenn's timing as a natural British accent.
Because I think they're trying to make him white-haired Bruce, but he's still got he's got some yellow in there, so I'm having a hard time with blonde Bruce.
I loved him in Game of Thrones.
It totally works too, because like naturally, and I think we were talking about this before, but like growing up without parents, the only influence he would have would be like Alfred or a boarding school, ostensibly yeah. where he probably went, which would definitely teach him to talk like that.
Yep, he'd be much more.
That would be another layer to the Batman voice, is that like you don't expect this semi-British guy to be Batman.
Yeah, exactly.
Voice.
If he has that like high society twang. And he's still got the accent. When he switches voices, it's
much smoother. See, and all I'm like sitting here thinking about is I watched, Batman Sub-Zero the other day.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking about, how are you doing he's like, well, so what do you do about the ladies? And some girls call him over. I'll let you know about that. I was like, wow. Well then, all right. That's all I can think about now.
Ooh, well then, on that note. Yeah. I guess it's time that we say goodbye then. Huh? All right. All right. Well, bye.
Bye.